This is Dr. Tar.
In 3D.
This is Professor Feather.
This is the Midnight Gadfly.
This is Dr. Head. And you are experiencing...
In 3D.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with the final installation of the top 100 best science fiction movies. I say movies with air quotes from the 1950s. All right, we're starting at number 25 and working our way down to one. So far, we have Professor Feather in the lead with the number that he has not seen is only 8. In second is Tar, who has not seen 11 of the ones that we've said so far.
Damn it.
Yeah. Then there's Dr. Head, who has not seen 18. And then there's the Midnight Gadfly that has not seen 33 movies so far.
All right. In that list. Double damn it.
out of the 75. So we'll see. Out we got 75. 25 more to go. You can catch up, Midnight Gadfly.
I think I've seen a lot of these, but I'm pretty sure you guys have seen all of them. So. Yeah. All right. So let's start at number 25. Earth versus the Flying Saucers.
Yes! Yeah. We win!
Are we in the 50s or 60s?
What did I... 50. We're in the 50s, right? Yeah, 50s.
The best?
Earth versus the Flying Saucers.
I'm on the wrong list. I'm on the worst. I'm like, wait a minute. There's so much crossover.
There is.
Well, at least that's not on the worst. They didn't put that on the worst.
Yeah, they didn't. Yeah, I've seen this one. I take it everybody's seen this one, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a
I'm getting
Harryhausen staple. Yeah.
Many times.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, yeah, but I like it. Yeah, the aliens in their spacesuit. So come on, they can't think of elbows. What the fuck? My butt itches. I can't do it.
No elbows.
No elbows.
Yeah, no elbows. No knees either. Was there?
They walked real stiff. They had little.
They walked stiff. Yeah,
little accordion things in between. But
yeah, that is true. Yeah.
But I did like how they looked, though. When I was little, I thought that looked cool. The featureless helmet, though, you know, that how they look, I thought that was kind of neat. Yeah, but
yeah, I'm trying to remember.
Saucer. Yes. And the Washington Monument.
Yeah.
They took it from Mars Attacks, did it.
Yeah.
It's a great book. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, those are terrible.
I love the animation, the Harryhausen, the SOP animation, the saucers. You see that shape being borrowed in, you know, lovingly in homage, like for
all the time.
Everywhere that saucer shape was prevalent. And the same thing when they use, I think they took this directly for like the Ed Wood movie. It basically takes this saucer shape, you know, to the beautiful degree, you know, probably the best animation you'll ever see that saucer have.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I think Night of the Foul Dead had some pretty
good. Oh, yeah. That was
our homage.
Cinematic fromage right there. No, fromage? What?
Fromage.
Oh, sorry.
It was fromage.
Cinematic fromage. Fromage.
Oh, fromage.
Yeah. The Tarn Feather wanted to use a Goulardi frisbee for it. And I said, no, come on, man. Put a little effort into it.
Yeah. But the aliens would have been highly intelligent. Of course they would have used it.
They'd have been beatniks. All right. On to number 24. 1955, Tarantula.
I like this one when I was little. I thought it was cool.
Yeah. I remember seeing it when I was a little kid.
Yeah. I like Earth versus the Spider much better than the Tarantula.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I do. I think as I've seen it more often. But I do like this one. I mean, Mara Corday, who just passed. So she was 95. She passed earlier this year. And I wanted to get her.
I liked the two scientists injected each other with the growth hormone. They get acromegalia. And then the makeup that they have for him, it's like, holy fuck, what is that? That doesn't look anything like Rhonda Hodden.
No, it is kind of creepy. It's got that kind of elephant man kind of vibe a little bit in that. that growth. I think it's what always freaked me out as a kid, like just what they look like, you know, because it was it wasn't so monstrous that I could tell it was a monster. It was just like a deformity, you know, from the experimentation. I thought it was really effective.
Yeah, and it's
And who
stars John Agar? John Agar.
I did Shirley Temple.
That joke never gets old.
And no, it doesn't. Because John Agar is in a lot of stuff.
All right.
Your opinion about it never gets old.
Well, I was right. I don't think he caught my tone.
I don't think so either.
Mr. what's the guy? Mr. Waverly, who played, what's that guy's name? That was in Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Played Paula Raymond.
the boss.
Yeah, the scientist. Yeah, Mr. Waverly. What's that guy? Carol something. No.
Leo G. Carroll.
Is that who it is?
Yeah. That's who Flickchart says it is.
Oh, okay. I'll go with that.
Yeah. But as far as jokes being old, if people are still listening to us, then they know that's what to expect. if they're still here.
This is true.
They know.
It's like a Family Guy level of repetition.
Oh,
that's right. So, except we just forget that we've repeated it. Well, you know, it's okay. It's all good.
Yeah, I forget too. And at number 24 is Tarantula.
Tarantula.
Oh, yes. I don't like this one as much as Earth versus the Spider.
Right. All right. Number 23, moving along. It Came from Outer Space. I've seen
this one.
I've
always liked this one.
Yeah. This one has the monster vision, right? Point of view from the creature. Yeah. And it's got Barbara Rush.
Have you seen the colorized version of it?
I found a copy on archive, I think. Yeah,
not bad. Not a bad colorized version.
Really?
No, some of those are terrible.
Lately, I've seen some really bad.
Yeah, they also have a color version of Plan 9 on there as well.
Good or bad? I mean, there's been,
you know, it's not bad. There are some of the scenes are better than others, but I think especially seeing the aliens in their satin costumes, outfits, that's excellent. And their uniforms. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I love colorization on like old Westerns. They would colorize them and they would give like the cowboys a pink shirt, you know.
Their palettes so small.
That's a fighting shirt.
That's salmon.
Saddle
that's,
up.
That's salmon. That's not pink.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Only men wear salmon. Yeah.
You watch your mouth. That's salmon.
Salmon. I like eating salmon too. So
I want the action figure for It Came from Outer Space. It's pretty cool. It's
they have one? Oh.
Yeah. Monsters in Motion.
How much is that bad boy?
$12,000.
Yeah.
No.
It's
life size. No, they have stuff about that.
They're $90 and they're sold out.
Wow.
Oh gosh, yeah. Doesn't look pretty cool.
All right, so
they have going back a little bit. They have a couple of robots on there right now, but they're like the robots from the old serial type thing, like the Phantom Creeps and the Commander Cody. Those robots, they're fucking like $400 a piece. That's the same.
They
look pretty cool.
I take the blame for bringing up toys. My bad. Number 22, The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, 1953. Paul Hubschmid, Paula Raymond.
I'm not sure if Cecil I saw Calloway. This one. Just kidding.
I was going to say, what?
Saw it in the theater?
I did.
No, I don't think I saw this in the theater. What year did this come out?
53.
No, I was only 3 years old, so I didn't see it.
I was going to say you didn't see it.
I didn't go to the theater until I was four.
I think you. I think you've been into
player four, son.
Dr. Head's pot organizer.
Everyone's welcome. I've got enough to go around.
Yeah, this is actually like, what does this make? Godzilla's dad. Pretty much.
Yeah, Beast from 20,000 Fathoms is regarded as the movie that was the inspiration for Inner Shore Honda. and for the people, the Godzilla
Tanaka,
team.
Yeah,
Tanaka. They wanted to kind of do their version of this. They liked the concept, the story, and the story is based on a red
something
on a,
like
on
that
a,
too.
On a, yeah, yes, the great big monster from something, I think, was the original working title. But this was a story based off Ray Bradbury.
Yes,
the Foghorn, I think, right?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And that's, I do love that scene. Because it's a really interesting looking creature, this design of this,
the Rhodiosaurus, or whatever they call
it. This dinosaur creature, and like most of these movies, I like the setup. You know, I mean, I hate to see the creature again. The creature's just out of place, out of time, and just unwillingly. It's not like a malevolent creature. It's just too big, and they brought it here, and it's causing damage. You know, it's like, hey, what the hell? But yeah, I do really just enjoy. I like these movies. They're just.
I like the little fact they had. They couldn't outright kill it because of the bacteria and all the viruses that it carried. The prehistoric.
Right, they didn't want to like leaking
pathogens.
Everywhere.
Yeah, and people were getting sick. And I thought that was a nice little touch. I thought
something you didn't expect.
Good. Right, and it kind of explained why you couldn't outright blast the fuck out of it and just and kill it, but.
Right, like in Reptilicus, which is basically it'll replicate, you know, it'll grow. Yeah. No, it's good.
So, Feather, you're a little quiet. Your volume seems a little quiet.
Does it now?
Oh, there you go.
I'm just not too close most of the time.
Okay. All right. So, number 21, When Worlds Collide.
Yeah. I like this one.
Yes.
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 Richard Durr, Barbara Rush
again.
Peter Hansen. Yeah.
Yeah, she was everywhere.
And John Hoyt.
Yeah.
1951.
I like the movie. We got the big planet coming toward it. We see Toho did their version with Gorath,
yeah.
You know, the same story. Although I will say that when Mystery Science Theater brought this out, no, it wasn't Worlds Collide. What movie?
No, they did Day of the Earth. They did This Island Earth.
This Island Earth. Yeah, that's right. Never mind. Yeah, I do. I like the effects. I like the look of the film. It looks very, very
George
dated.
Powell.
You know, 1951. Yes. Yeah, the color. You know, I like it.
The
real
yeah.
world but approach to solving this problem that we see later on in other movies. You know, like we see these kinds of things. Like, we're fucked. So let's just build a ship and get as many people off the planet as we can.
And it's interesting. They took like this evil billionaire guy to finance the ship and everything.
Yeah.
You know, just so he could go. I, you know, kind of foreshadowing. I call it SpaceX.
Yeah.
And number 20, we have 20 Million Miles to Earth.
Oh, that's a fun one.
1957.
Is this equator mass?
No.
No, that's the.
That was 20 million years.
20 million years. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
It's like the prototype to the Cyclops, that monster. That
yeah.
Ymir,
yeah.
Or whatever they called it.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. The Ymir. I always. I don't know if I. Like is a strong word. This movie always makes me feel just too sad for the creature. You know, again, here's another creature came back and it was raised and then it grows up and then, you know, people are afraid of it. It's a Frankenstein story. I mean, yeah, attack it. Yeah. And just, you know, they got to go out of their way to kill it. And him thinking, here's this creature from another planet. What could we learn from this being? Yeah, it's a cool looking creature. And I just always feel more sad for the creature than ever was terrified. Maybe because we saw it come out of an egg and he's, you know, the little kids playing with it, you know, and I kind of like that concept of it, where we're seeing the birth of a monster, you know, and but
what year was this?
1957.
Just before Seventh Voyage of Sinbad.
Height of the Cold War too, so that has a lot to do with how they treat aliens. Movies that
things that are different.
A big thing.
Everything's a potential threat.
Yeah. If it's alien, which you know equates to
alien. But the creature itself was. I thought it was pretty cool.
I like the creature.
Yeah, and that fight with the elephant was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. You just
some of the
see
best stop animation.
Same thing like Guanji. Yeah,
yeah, it's really fantastic animation.
And it had that Harryhausen, just like the Cyclops. It had that every time he did the two, you know, something that walked. You know, they held the arms back, like
expanding their chest.
Like he's got, spread chest, like the about ready to bounce or grab you.
Yeah.
He said he did that because you didn't have to do the swinging arms, so he just kind of kept them like. I thought that was a cool. Yeah, he's like figuring out all these ways to skimp on the animation, so looking up the. Yeah, I thought that was neat.
Oh, why not? That's you know.
Oh yeah,
that's great. It looks good
and
too.
It creates a style that I mean, you know his stuff when you see it.
And he's done that in all the movies since. He did that in the Sinbad movies. He did that throughout those and up until the 70s. That
and it looks dynamic.
That. Yeah,
and I just pouncing.
Okay, moving on to number 19, we have Invaders from Mars, 1953, starring Helena Carter, Arthur Franz, and Jimmy Hunt.
Mike Hunt.
Hey, that joke never gets old.
Oh, that is an old joke, but then.
Did I exaggerate enough that time?
Perfect.
I like this movie a lot. Yeah. I love the way it looks, the color, it foreshadows surreal. the way Batman was shot with the tilted camera and the extended, the weird angles and like this forced perspective and the look of the sets. I just really like this movie.
Who's the cinematographer? He is a director too. Who's the cinematographer? The Menzies? What's his name?
Cameron Menzies. He's the director. Yes. Did he do cinematography as well?
I thought that's what his specialty was, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't know the name.
I didn't know. But anyway.
I just love the way it looks. And then when you find out
it's
story,
a dream,
you're like, oh, it makes sense. Yeah. Certainly, yeah.
Kind of like a Caligari type thing going on.
Yeah, and it kind of unwinds and becomes kind of crazy at the end, like as the end of a dream would be. Like it just gets more and more ridiculous, and it goes out of control. Like, oh my god, it started off so simple, now it's become this big thing.
And being filmed on sets too, for the most part, it just had that feeling to it. It's just kind of
like War of the Worlds has that feel as well. The sets on War of the Worlds, George Powell. That's a really really great set. Hopefully, I didn't blow our wad. It's probably on the top 18.
Okay, moving on to 18. The Revenge of Frankenstein. Terrence Fisher was the director, Peter Cushing, Francis Matthews, and Eunice Gayson. They call this a costume horror.
Carl, when they put trying to fix Carl.
These kind of blur for me. I've seen them all. The Frankenstein ones and the Dracula ones kind of they begin to blur after a while. The Frankensteins, I think, are better.
The same for me. Yeah,
Professor Feather. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I like that.
You really didn't
story.
See the monster. It was Carl. But okay. There again, people like they fixed him, and then people fucked with him and gave him brain damage, and he kind of reverted back to what he was and became the monster. And it was just
Well, they kept a continuity. They were working on an ongoing story of sorts, like because I love Curse of Frankenstein. I think it's fantastic, and the sequels, some of them were really good, and some were not. But I like that they were pushing the story
on
the doctor and what's going on and how he sometimes will change his name or all those other other things. Like yes, Frankenstein. Oh, okay.
Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Yes. But I like Universal, the Hammer stuff has a look to it. Like classic Hammer, there's a look to it that's gothic and the sets look dirty and used, especially when they do the Frankenstein ones. There's often a lot of dirt, like when they go into the town, like people are unwashed, they don't look pretty, they're greasy looking, so I think they're really going for like the period, but the sets are gorgeous, the costumes are really nice, so there's just a look to Hammer that's kind of lush.
What year did this one come out?
This was 58.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I saw this one in the theater. I remember seeing a bunch of the Hammer stuff in the theater, you know, because it's getting into the time, you know, the late 50s, early 60s, you know, all of that when I was going to the movies a lot. So, and they were great on the big screen. The color was just very brilliant.
And you know what else was made in 58 though? Was I Was a Teenage Frankenstein.
Another one of my favorite movies, yeah.
Yeah, but showing you where America was and where they were going from it. It was just, that's interesting seeing that because Teenage Werewolf and all that stuff came out about the same time, too.
It was about making money. Those movies were made on a dime and they were put on a double bill or triple bill and, you know.
About making money. And I Was a Teenage... Right there just draws, you know, your audience right there.
Right.
You know? So, and at that time, I mean, that was, you know, huge. Going to the theater, it was huge.
Or drive-in, yeah.
More drive-ins, yeah.
Gadfly, have you seen this?
I've seen this, yes. More than once. A lot of these Hammer used to be playing like in the afternoon, like on a Friday. We get home from school and it's at about like 4 o'clock they'd start playing them before the news would come on. I can't remember what station it was.
Channel 11 doing like a week of, you know. Yeah.
It might have been Channel 50 or Channel 20 too. I can't remember. Those were a couple of them that would come in once in a while really well and sometimes not so good. At number 17, we have, I don't know about this, Monkey Business, Howard Hawks, 1952, starring Cary Grant, Ginger Rogers, and Charles Coburn. So
I don't know this one.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
I don't think I've seen this one either.
Oh, it's pretty funny. It's a good movie.
I'd like to, yeah.
What makes
I've seen the what? I've seen the Monkey Business with the Marx Brothers.
What puts it into the science fiction thing?
That's what I was trying to figure out exactly. They're doing some experiments with the monkey. I mean, it's been years since I've seen this.
Are they shocking the monkey?
No, don't think so.
They were. It's 50s.
I think they were.
It's the 50s scientists. They were.
I think they were flocking the monkey.
And you looked all puffy and white.
Not flogging. Flocking.
What I tried to do last night. It didn't work out. Too old.
He was still all it's fluffy actually and good.
I think Cary Grant's a really good comedian.
Yes.
And, you know,
I think so too.
Yeah. It's really a good movie. It's pretty funny.
It's Dr. Barnaby Fulton, an absent-minded research chemist for the Oxley Chemical Company, is trying to develop an elixir of youth.
Yes.
He is urged on by his commercially-minded boss, Oliver Oxley. One of Barnaby's chimpanzees, Esther, breaks loose in the laboratory, mixes a beaker of chemicals, and pours the mix into the water cooler. The chemicals have the rejuvenating effect that Barnaby is seeking.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde, Professor.
Hilarity ensues.
Okay. Yeah. Absent-minded professor.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
I
liked him in Arsenic All the Lace, too.
He's great in that.
Yeah.
That's just a great movie.
Yes, I wish it's so funny. They were going to, you know, Boris Karloff was going to play the part, but something came up and he couldn't. So they got, Raymond Massey or somebody to play
him? And I love how they keep saying
he does.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
And Peter Lorre is just so funny in that one.
Johnny, just relax.
And I like that they play on that. They do a play on that on Andy Griffith, where they it's not arsenic and old lace. It's alcohol and old lace, where the two old ladies are moonshining, moonshining, and then they're turning in all the other moonshiners in the area until they become the only ones that cornered the market. But there's an elixir. They don't, you know, it's not just respect. It's for special occasions like potato week. You know?
Now, did those two old ladies have a Southern accent?
No.
No.
Well, no, nobody. Maybe one did. Only a few. Yeah. Not everyone did. Andy had an exaggerated one.
No. Nobody did. Except the only people that had accents were that came out of the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Rafe Hollister would often do that. Yeah, Andy had an exaggerated one, but when he was slowed down.
He's the only one that had, you know, out of all the cast, the only one.
Who was the character that he was he's just a crazy fuck. And he Ernest did all T. these Bass? Voices like for comedy.
Ernest
for
T. Bass?
Cartoons. Is that who?
Ernest T. Bass, is that the character you're thinking of? The one who would
throw bricks through windows? Character that, but the actor that did him, he did all these voices for cartoons also. I mean, you'd recognize it if you heard it. You know who I'm talking? Yeah, man, I wish.
I know who he is. Ernest T. Bass was. He's another one that had the thick accent.
Yeah.
One of the
Darlins who came in out of town.
Everybody who comes at, from out of the
right,
country.
Right. They weren't big city folk like the Mayberry.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
We have toilets in the house.
Sorry. All right. Moving along. We have a number 16, 1956's Godzilla, King of the Monsters. I think this is the American version, right?
Right. Yes. So, Raymond Burr shot his part in one
shot
day.
Shot his wad in one
day. And one day they inserted it throughout the movie.
Wad. Good.
And they remove a lot of the darker stuff that's in the original Gojira. They took out some of the political stuff.
They still.
It's pretty sanitized.
There's two different movies.
It's in there a little bit. I mean, it's in there a little bit.
A little.
It's hard to disguise it completely, but there are scenes when I first saw Gojira, the scenes like where the woman, and it's like they do even show it, that she's cradling her children and Godzilla's like lurking over and kind of looks down. Like
ambers are falling.
She's saying, we'll be with daddy soon or something like that. I'm like, Jesus Christ, that's fucking dark. Because then, you know, she's gone. Yeah, and there's still terrifying moments. Like, the scariest scene for me in this movie is the guys who are on top of the news tower.
The camera crew?
Norse recording, and here comes Godzilla. I'm like, oh, fuck. And he's at their level. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, that's the most terrifying thing. you know, but it's still a really good movie. You know, it's still the darkest.
Well,
best of the American and, you know, it. Where they interjected American-made scenes. I think it's
no green slime,
but
it does its own, right?
Green slime's a different
Professor show. Feather, you were saying you like that?
I forget. I forget what I was going to say.
I think you said I like something. You were going to say I like.
I liked the movie until I saw Gojira, which was years later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I went, oh shit, you know, this is the real movie, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Fuck the Americans.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can see why it was
bad about
over,
us. We'll take
that out. It was such a popular movie in Japan. I could easily see why, but it still took 2 years to get to the States.
Yeah.
You know, and then they probably had to sanitize it. They probably had to, you know, make sure.
Oh, they sanitized.
Keeping the core of the story. But then, you know, it wasn't like they needed. I'm not sure, but maybe it just took them that long to get the rights. I mean, because, again, there are only a few non-original actors. Raymond Burr is the lion's share. And that was everything was shot in a single day. So, you know, it was cheaply to release here in the States. Yeah. I mean, that's what took so long. But I agree with you, Professor Feather. I'll watch it because sometimes I just don't want to read the subtitles. And I know the story a bazillion times.
Yeah.
And this is the one I first saw as a kid. So it's familiar to me. Exactly. You know,
it really is the first introduction to Godzilla to me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw it on, what was it, Unconvention Week. They were having an election, presidential election. And everything was covered with all the delegates and all that stuff. So Channel 50 was having the Unconvention Week. And this was one of the movies. And that's where I saw it.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I didn't see the original Godzilla until probably maybe like 10 years ago. I never had an opportunity to watch it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really even know. I think I'd heard people mention that the original one, you know, was much better. And it is. I mean, it is much better. At number 15, 1958, we have The Blob, starring Steve McQueen, Annetta Corsat, and Earl Rowe. And this movie scared the shit out of me as a kid. I don't know why. I think it was just the
look old man running through the woods with his.
Yeah,
now, but that scared me.
It's scary, yeah, but you know, you get this slow moving mass, and it looks creepy and gross. But there's just that inevitability of it, the whole thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why, and when you see it coming through the vents.
Squeeze through that scared the underneath doors, that scared me.
Started getting as big as a town, and you know, it's just all that stuff is freaking me out.
It's immense by the end of the movie. Yeah, I grew up watching this because it was one of my mom's favorite. So she, you know, this was a very gentle kind of sci-fi horror movie that she really liked as a kid. And so, you know, we liked watching these together. And I still love this movie. It's not particularly good in places, but it does capture the spirit of the era. It's the 50s. We've got this early or late 50s
opening
era.
Song too.
Great that song. Was... Yeah. I mean, it's rock and roll. It's cars. And, you know, the colors are great. It's short. You know, it gets to the point. I like the movie. I do.
It's Steve McQueen as the oldest teenager.
Going. I was just going to say the same thing.
Well, Anita Corso, you had mentioned Andy Griffith, she played Miss Crump on Andy Griffith. Yeah. So this was like one of her earlier acting roles
That's
as well.
That's funny you say that because I just saw a thing on YouTube. They're talking about movie posters compared to Japanese and American, the movies that are released on both sides. The Blob over there, the poster looked really different because most of it was a big picture of Steve McQueen and the rest was like the little things that happened in the movie. And it was like their title change. It was like Steve McQueen in like some big peril or something like that. Oh. Steve McQueen was like becoming, it was like kind of a big name at the time when The Blob got released over there. It had a little more, anyway, I just thought that was funny because you see The Blob movie poster and it's just a big ass picture of Steve McQueen on it, so it's just like Steve McQueen's perils or whatever, big peril.
I think those teen idols were really big in Japan because I know Ben Furuya, who plays Ultraman, his idol growing up was not Steve McQueen but on the waterfront
Marlon Brando?
No, I can see him. James Dean. Not on the waterfront. James Dean. That's his idol. And so I think there was the time where they were seeing the really early, still getting American and Western like movies and things that were so different culturally and having such a different kind of like someone impact who's bucking the system when Japan is still so firmly entrenched in the, you know, that kind of class system. I think it was really appealing to the young crowd to see that kind of rebellion, you know, embodied in Steve McQueen or in these actors, James Dean, you know. So
yeah,
because every time he comes to the States, he goes to, like, if he can, he goes to go visit James Dean's grave. I mean, he's like a huge fan, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah. I think James Dean was way overrated. All right. So number 14 is Duck Dodgers and in the 24 and a half century. I don't know how you say it. 24 and a half.
How did this get on the list? But I still like it. I mean, it's not like
it is awesome. Yeah.
This is the actual cartoon. Yeah. Well, I mean,
what year is this?
It's Chuck Jones.
Yeah. 1953.
I mean, it's like Chuck Jones at the height of what I think that animation style that he was doing with Warner Brothers.
And Porky Pig was his sidekick. What was
this one? Yeah, this is why they have Marvin. You see, was it the Marvin the Martian as well as in this one? Yeah.
Yep.
With his
trying to retrieve
space modulator.
Yeah.
That's great that it's on the list. It surprises me that it made it. But I love this era of Warner Brothers, of the Bugs Bunny, the Looney Tunes, the mid 50s, early, you know, 50s is my favorite era. I just really love the look of these cartoons. Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting when Chuck Jones went over to do Tom and Jerry. I did not like it. I didn't, because it just didn't work in that.
No,
I'm so used to the original Hanna-Barbera version that they did.
The theatrical ones that were.
Yeah.
Super intricate. Yeah.
But I got to visit the Chuck Jones Museum, which is in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I'm asking the lady there, I'm like, why is the Chuck Jones Museum here? And she goes, well, he spent a lot of time here. Like, he would come here after he would have whatever he'd be working on in Los Angeles would be done. He'd take all of his money and he'd come back to his house in Santa Fe and live there. And it was a big part of the art scene there. And, you know, so it was pretty cool. They had a bunch of original art for his, but I couldn't afford any of it. It was just, you know, pretty crazy. Cool. All right. Moving on to number 13. I know we've all seen this one. 1958's The Fly. Another one that creeped me out, man.
Mm-hmm. Help me. Help me.
That yes. scene is just terrifying.
Vincent Price.
Oh, it is. And, it still is. It's still so effective. That fly makeup and the terror look on his face. He's just looking at the side. He's trapped and mm-hmm. can't get the spider looks goofy. But
yeah.
But he is that's yeah, that's horrific.
Except it looks like he has a shower cap on, but I don't. Oh, well. I'll get over that.
And song that help.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then you see them getting crushed with the rock, you know, at the same time. Like, oh, man. Even as a kid, I knew, like, oh, Jesus Christ, you just crushed him, man. Yeah.
Yep.
I can't say when they filmed this, Price and the other guy that was filming, they kept cracking up, having to do what they had to do. And I guess, yeah that took longer than they expected. But yeah. I would.
All right. So at number 12, we have a movie I don't think I've seen, 1959's On the Beach.
I don't
Gregory think I've Peck, ever seen this one. Ava Gardner, and Donna Anderson. Has anybody seen this one?
Fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Is it good? This the one where they're in the submarine, Professor Feather?
Yeah. Yeah, where, yeah, the apocalypse.
They're going to Australia or whatever. Trying to go to Australia.
They're going out as far as wherever they can to avoid
the inevitable. It's spreading though, isn't it?
Yes, like, to avoid the inevitable because okay. it is the last effort because the world has been pretty much destroyed.
Yeah. I have not seen this one.
And it's a really good movie. I think based on a Neville Shute novel too. It's the acting is just fucking true. And it's not scary. In the sense of the word, you know, it's horrific. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is pure horror. I mean,
yeah, it's no
hope. And just, there's no hope.
Yeah. No, and yeah, yeah, and it's done so well. Just yeah, this movie needs to be number one as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's a great 50s. Anti-war movie.
It's most yes. realistic. I mean,
it's the most realistic.
Yeah, yeah, out of it's all. Every bit as effective, I think, as like All Quiet on the Western Front. You know, is.
It, yes. It is.
Yeah.
It is. Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. It's a masterpiece.
That movie surprised me.
And it's considered, On the Beach is considered a masterpiece. I mean,
mm-hmm. yes.
You know, it's very highly regarded. And one of my top movies. I haven't seen it in, boy, it's been ages since.
I wouldn't mind.
I don't know if I want to watch it. Yeah. Oh. Because it's so depressing.
Yeah.
It's just right. so depressing. And, you know, the first time I watched, I went, God, this is a great movie.
Who is who's Stan? It's not Kubrick. Who's
Stanley Kramer?
Kramer.
Yeah. All right, moving on
to director. Yeah,
yeah. Moving on to number 11, we have Them, 1954. James Whitmore, Edmund Gwenn, and Joan Weldon.
Edmund Gwenn. Let me chew some gum.
And James Arness.
And
James Arness, yeah.
Hand me a rope. I'm gonna.
I love this movie.
I'm gonna get me a man.
Yeah, Marshall Dillon.
Yeah.
What is that big bug?
I love the animatronics.
Give it some sugar.
I love the writing. I love Edmund Gwenn. Is it because he's also the best Santa Claus there is?
Yeah, yeah.
In Miracle on 34th Them Street.
And that'd he's be awesome. Just a great—he is a prototypical little scientist guy.
Yes, giving he can't you all even the put his goggles on right. You know, right? Yeah. Doesn't like to say over. You know, and yeah, it's a
But I liked him. Yeah,
the stereotype bumbled. You know, who's focused only on science. Yeah.
A bit of trivia: James Whitmore's eyebrows got a credit too.
They use part of that fur for the ants.
they were called two caterpillars about to mate.
Them.
Caterpillars.
That's what the movie's referring to.
Yeah, them. It's them.
Yeah, them.
Yeah. Soon to be.
No, not them.
As they
them.
Can join.
That I stole that joke from Robin Williams because he said that about what's the director? The Martin Scorsese.
Oh, Scorsese.
He's the director with the eyebrows that look like two caterpillars about ready to mate.
Yeah.
Or if they are in Cleveland, it'd be Woolly Bears, wouldn't it?
Right.
Ooh, hey.
Yeah. Next weekend is the Woolly Bear Festival in Vermilion. So,
All right. So we all saw them. And
yeah, them's great. Love it.
And coming in at number 10, 1957, The Curse of Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. Directed by Terrence Fisher, Christopher Lee, Hazel Court, and Peter Cushing.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
It is the movie that I think got me hooked on Hammer. It might have been the first one I remember, but I remember being scared to death at the first Dracula movie, like that one, like the first time he comes in and sees Harker, like it just, you know, that it's so intense, it just scared the shit out of me. I was like four, you know, but this movie I fell in love with. I love the fact that we're getting to see Victor Frankenstein from a teenager, you know, and like seeing behind the scenes and how he becomes the doctor he becomes, and
the
then
obsession of it,
yeah, and then the body parts with the eyeballs and the blood and, you know, all the stuff that Hammer did that Universal didn't do. And a look of the creature. I mean, good God, Christopher Lee looks, he looks like what Frankenstein should look. There's no flat head here. The flesh looks dead and disgusting and decayed, torn, decayed. Yeah. Yeah. Really
but
creepy.
But it's not. Rejuvenated, yeah. I guess, but it still has a...
Yeah. It's a superb horror movie or science fiction movie.
And I do like how they show him when they reanimate him. You know, it's not the big electrical units. It's, you know, it's like the galvanic, you know, you got to turn this crank to create the static electricity and all that stuff. And the chemicals, there's all the chemical, you know, I mean,
yeah,
it's not
the big
just
bath.
The lightning that brings him to life. It's
right.
Just more alchemy, I guess, but...
Yeah, it's good stuff. I'm pretty sure Hammer Horror was some of the first horror movies I saw because they would show them on TV a lot. I think the first one was, what's the one with the vampire and he's got almost like brown hair or red hair and he burns in a windmill?
Brides of Dracula.
Brides of Dracula. I think that might have been
I
one
like
of the first
that
ones.
One. I
yeah, I love that
one. I think I like it because they show Van Helsing as not this little old professor man. You know, they did that with the first one, too, where it becomes like this swashbuckling kill the vampire thing at the end. You know, he's sliding across the table, grabs the candlesticks and forces him back, you know, and rips the curtains off or whatever. I like that. And in this one, he like jumps on the windmill and makes the cross, which is kind of funny. But
right. Yeah, that's good. So what is it? Is Curse of the Werewolf? The Oliver Reed, is that a Hammer?
Yeah.
Or not?
Is yes. It?
That's
Hammer. Because to me, that is the best looking werewolf of all time. I mean, it's my favorite
one. One of the best werewolf movies ever, though.
Yeah, that's good.
I think.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. I digress. At number 9 is another movie I haven't seen. The Man in the White Suit, starring Alec Guinness, Joan Greenwood, and Cecil Parker.
I've heard of it, but never saw it.
I have not seen this.
I think I've seen it, but I don't remember it at all. So I'll say I didn't see it.
Alec Guinness?
He makes like a fabric that can't, it won't, it's indestructible, basically.
Is that what it
is? And then he wants to put it out there, and then everybody around him says, we're going to go broke if we do that, because no one's going to. So, yeah, it becomes more of that kind of a, you know, more corporate, trying to suppress technology, I guess, idea.
It says comedy satire.
Yeah.
Sci-fi comedy.
Huh. Man, I never seen it.
Yeah, I don't, all right. That's what I said. If I had, I don't remember it at all. Yeah, I probably have
never even heard of it. It's 1951.
Yeah.
I've only seen a couple of stills from
it. I'll have to look at that, see if it's available anywhere.
All right. So coming in at number 8. War of the Worlds.
Ah, yeah, that was
Gene Barry, Anne Robinson, and Les Tremaine.
Being little and seeing this for the first time was, and actually having a colored TV at the time when we first got. Yeah, that was cool.
That was you can hear the sound of those ships and as they're belching out that fire.
Both the sound effects to me are like. So engraved the heat beam and the green
that kind of throbbing, kind of wispy, whispery kind of echoey, reverby stuff. Yeah, I this is a fantastic movie. This,
George Powell.
Yeah, George Powell. The special effects are amazing. And I love seeing the stills, how big these ships were. You know, the model ships.
Oh, the models themselves.
Yeah, they were really big. But yeah, I mean, it has that 50s looks like the era, and that's what I like so much about it. It's kind of comforting in that way. I love the sets. You could tell they're sets, and some of the times, you know, it doesn't bother
me. I guess their major problem was trying to hide those wires all the time, and it was just how they.
That's why a lot of the scenes were at night.
Yeah. Initially, did you ever hear the story initially how they wanted to create the machines were supposed to be tripods, and they wanted to use the electricity like a Tesla coil. They tried it out. But it was like they were saying, if it like over arced or it took like some ungodly amount of volts to get what they wanted.
Because so now we would just do it with
opted CG. For the wires instead.
Yeah. They were trying to solve real problems. They didn't have
and I read where I was watching a making of this. They started filming this and they thought they had the rights to it. They hadn't. Did something earlier where they used an H.G. Wells with the family of H.G. Wells, but something, what was it? There was a thing in the contract saying silent. It was a silent movie, I guess. But when they transitioned to sound and stuff, the contract was void. And they started filming before they had the rights to do it. So they had to scramble and talk to the Wells estate. It was kind of weird at the time, but Paramount. I think they would have understood that situation. But
I thought the spaceship design was creepy. You know what I mean? Because they almost look like an alien itself, as opposed to a flying saucer
organic,
or whatever.
More organic than a
I wonder was that an influence in Nope? In the ship design in Nope?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I know, but when you watch Robinson Crusoe on Mars. which I still like. It's like, hey, that's just
it's a good thing it was in the 60s. It's a good thing it was in the 60s, that one, because it would have been number one on the list. All right. At number seven, we come in with 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Kirk Douglas, James Mason, and Paul Lucas.
And Peter Lorre.
Pleasure. Mm-hmm. Peter Lorre. Yeah, I remember this as a kid. I think I bought this on DVD, this and a bunch of those other kind of movies that were similar to that, and tried to show them to my son when he was like 6 or 7, and he was not into it at all. So he's like, I think spoiled by the special effects.
I do like this one.
20, I do too.
It's just a fun version of it. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Was that made by Disney?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or what's the other company they had at the time?
Buena Vista, Touchstone. Touchstone was one of theirs too. 20,000 Leagues. We've all seen it, right?
We've all seen it, yeah.
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 Cool. All right, well, at number six, we have The Incredible Shrinking Man, 1957. Grant Williams, Randy Stewart, April Kent. I know we've all
totally
seen this
different
one
from anything else at the time.
It's a nickname for something about me, but I don't want to get into it.
I think it's cold.
Like a frightened turtle. This was based on who wrote the story that this was
Richard
based on.
Matheson.
Yes. I remember seeing this as probably as a early teenager because it was probably like on the Ghoul or on Superhost or something like that, and I just really liked the concept and they're putting this in when he's like trying to fight like the cat or the mouse or the big spider as he can shrink continues to shrink, and I love the sets they had to build, these gigantic replicas of like a giant needles or spools or as he's shrinking to continually making these large sets. I just thought it was a really good version of the story and really of its time. It was a good movie for its era.
And even his little soliloquy at the end when he's like talking about, you know, he's going to continue shrinking and he knows that. He
just, yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, it was kind of interesting. He's like looking through that chicken wire, but it's so big that he's like holding it like bars or whatever.
Just, he's going to go subatomic. We're going to get into the quantum.
Yeah. Realm. Yeah. Well, yeah. First. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. At number five, we have The Thing from Another World.
At five?
Margaret Sheridan, yep. Kenneth Toby, Tobey, and Robert Cornthwaite. I don't know. The yeah, I think this top five is... I think it's got some good stuff in the top five, but it's... I think it could be contention. It's contentious with me who number one is on this list.
Opinion. You're,
yeah. Well, I think this was voted. Yeah, I think they just do polls, you know, for people on the site, and they vote for whatever they want. I saw The Thing from Another World the first time when we did an episode on it. I'd never seen the original before, and I thought it was awesome. Yeah, that was really good.
Howard Hawks.
Yeah. Marshall Dillon.
Yeah, this is arguably
the best movie of
the era. This and Day the Earth Stood Still. Yeah, I love this movie. I love the Christian Nyby Howard Hawks combination. It was Howard Hawks' thumbprints is all over this movie. And I love how people talk over one another. They finish each other's sentences. It's like so rapid paced, but it's so timed so perfectly. I'm thinking, my God, they probably had to rehearse that just to get it right.
That's what made it so and that's kind of what made the Carpenter movie. Yeah, he was included. Yeah, it's really good. The tense that they build up the tension.
Yes, I love it. It's a relatively short movie, 87 minutes. It tells a great story, and it doesn't waste frames. It is very sparse in storytelling.
And they don't show him, the creature.
Yeah, the creature. Lot. You see a shadow in the ice, or you hear descriptions.
And I love how the Geiger counter, because he's slightly radioactive, it starts, you know, they get a little, yeah.
And you can tell when he's near or has been near.
You see that alien, too, with the sound detector and all that stuff, you know. Oh, my God. Yeah.
No,
it was not true to the original, though.
No, it was not.
And I didn't really care for the makeup for the thing itself. I didn't like that. He just looked...
He's like a big brain, kind of the larger, like a Frankenstein.
Yeah, I've kind of grown accustomed to it now, but it's just that I love the movie, don't get me wrong, but I just... Yeah, they could have done a little more to make him...
They could not have done the creature from the short story.
No.
I mean, that's what makes the 82 version or 81 version fantastic, is because, oh my God, that you finally have the special effects, the practical effects that make this terrifying thing come to life.
And the plot.
Yes.
I mean, it's so different, you know. It's just that, you know, they took Howard Hawks and his crew just said, you know, that's too much. We're going to, condense it and not use everything in there, you know, because we're cheap asses. And, you know, it's still a pretty decent movie until you see Carpenter's Thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that makes the Thing from Another World pale. I mean, quite considerably.
I did like in The Thing from Another World, I love the scene where they found out it was plant and they're growing the plants and they give them they're all feeding off of blood, and they even point out like the ones closer to it are getting bigger than the ones farther from it. Because then he gives the guy the stethoscope and here, listen to it, you know, and just say, the guy's
like a baby crying, like
sounds babe, like a wailing baby,
crying, it's kind of cool. I grew up watching this movie, and I'd seen it before the Thing, and I love both versions because they both do different things.
Yeah, well, exactly. Literally
and figuratively. Yeah, and so to me, they're not really apples to orange or apples to apples, but
apples to apples. Yeah. You're right, absolutely.
Yeah, but I still think Margaret Sheridan is one of the most beautiful actresses on the screen. She's just gorgeous, and I love her character, and I love how she's a good foil for Kenneth Toby's character. You know,
Captain Hendry, is really good.
Yeah, it's very flirtatious, and everyone's kind of breaking each other's balls. And I love the tone. I love it's a light tone. In a lot of ways, there's a lot of humor. woven into it, and the characters kind of shine. I love the Doctor, how obsessed he is. Of course, he's falling into that trope, but I love how direct he is, how formal he is. You know, I just love this movie. It's just such
and
a
that whole
movie.
Classic scene where they actually figure out the shape of the object. That's such a classic.
Yeah,
and what's the line at the very end? Keep watching the skies.
That's right.
Yeah. That's a 50s, you know, being
Cold War. Here we are.
Yeah.
That's right.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah. And John Carpenter's the thing. To me, that's a perfect movie. There's nothing.
It is.
You know, I can't think of anything that's wrong with it. The number four.
And it's funny how it took so long for people to realize that, though, too. I mean, when it first came out, I loved it, but no one liked it.
It was a bomb.
I saw it in the theater. I sat through it twice. And I was just like, oh my God, I had never seen anything like it. Like, as far as the effects, I mean, I was blown away. And just how scary it was. I love the music, and Acone's music is good anyway, but it's so sparse. And kind of that one note, just kind of that I think it's called Humanity, I think, is the song. But that throbbing boom, boom.
But you know what I thought? You know,
I love it.
What made it so weird for me? I really liked it. Yeah, you got to see all this weird special effect, but I liked the acting and the story that brought you into those scenes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just amazed by that. It was just so natural. It seemed natural, you know, at the time, and just how everything flowed. It's like, you know, everybody's going, oh, what the fuck you want now?
Yeah.
It's
like, you see a clash of people who've been together for a long time. They're stressed out. They're tired.
Isolated.
Which movie are we talking about now?
The newer one,
I like the prequel sequel, too.
Yeah, it was good.
Oh, did you?
I thought it was a good, like, it was a good Rogue One. You know, it was episode 3.5, kind of, so to speak. I thought it was a good way to set up the story. I mean, they'd repeat it, but I liked how they, because it was just about the Norwegian camp. And
did you know they were supposed to do practical effects for that? That's what was the whole idea when they wrote it, was like they really wanted to recreate practical effects.
Oh, I would love to have seen practical effects.
Whoever financed said, no, we're doing CGI. And it's just, I was curious of what that would.
I would love to see their ideas.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on to number four. We have the Japanese version of Gojira, Godzilla.
Yeah, I think everybody knows about this.
Yeah, we talked about this one already because we were comparing it with the American version.
It's
good to see it up higher on the list, you know. I think that's a good
thing. I'm surprised. And it's the first movie by Akira Takahata, who became an international star. Kind of take John Wayne and Elton John and Cary Grant and roll them all up into one. And then, you know, he was big everywhere except for the States. But Takahata-san loved coming to G-Fest, as many of the guests did. I have the pleasure of seeing him multiple times and talking with him and getting autographs and just a great guy. And he passed very recently. And
at what age? He was like 90.
Yeah, he's in his 90s, I think so. But he had some great stories to tell, especially when they were shooting Monster Zero with Nick Adams. He called him Horny Nick because Nick was wanting to score with every chick, especially who their co-host.
Oh, who's his co-star?
Kumi Mizuno. Like, yeah, good God, she's beautiful. So, yeah. Anyway, Gojira, a much better movie than Godzilla.
Yep. Yeah. And at number three, which I'm not happy about this, is Forbidden Planet.
Not happy in what way? Is it too high or too low?
That should be number one, as far as I'm concerned. Okay. I love that movie. There's so much in it that is amazing. Story's amazing. What the monster is. Go ahead.
What year?
Oh, 1956.
The only thing I didn't like was the illustrated monster.
Disney did?
That that just seemed to throw a loop into it. I thought that was cheesy compared to everything else.
Yeah.
But that was the only flaw.
The
rest of the movie's pretty good. You know, I mean, I like the movie. And who's the girl?
Anne Francis.
Anne Francis.
Oh my God.
Your dream girl.
She was one of my dream girls back.
Many a sock.
But she had a
spent for Anne Francis. I named this sock Anne and this one Francis.
Anyway, in this movie, she literally was the dream girl.
Yeah.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
That's why
this is a movie I saw with my parents. This is like the first time I experienced it. They made a popcorn bowl and we were sitting there and this came on Creature Feature at night. It's like, and this changed everything. This became my like Wizard of Oz. You know, like people always talk about Wizard of Oz. This was that to me, and it was just, that was so cool. The robot. That was the first time I ever heard a robot talk like,
mm-hmm. with personality.
You know,
yes, it's sarcasm.
A robotic talk, but you're like,
what sapphires? With diamonds and sapphires.
Yeah, know the sarcasm too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and what a great design. I mean, Robbie is like such a cool robot. Yeah. You know, he's like
hold that. He did B9 too.
You're right.
It's just
right.
Yeah.
No. I remember the first time I saw this movie is I was babysitting for my aunt and she had a laser disc. That's the first time I saw Alien. The first time I saw Forbidden Planet. She had all these great movies, cool. You know, and. So, I mean, there's a picture, you know, laser disc. You had to spin it, you know, turn it over halfway through, which was kind of awesome, like an album.
They looked good, though.
They looked good. It was amazing. I bet they looked even on a CRT TV, awesome. It was widescreen.
I've never seen one, though.
It was like the DVD of its day, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was just like mesmerized. I mean, the main set when they're on the planet, the Krell, the interior of the Krell, the special effects, the music,
the detail of everything.
Everything was so explained. And then the story itself about the creature. I agree with you, Professor Feather. That was the one thing I don't like as much. It's like I don't care to see the creature because it's making the footsteps, but the design of it with it looks so silly in a way.
But it was a dream itself, though. It's a nightmare.
The creature. Yeah, like it looks like the orange-haired creature from the Bugs Bunny cartoon, the one that's in the garden, the castle, and Bugs Bunny's like doing his hair.
I just didn't like the way they animated it. Actually saw it.
Yeah.
That kind of bothered me.
I love the story and the Krell and creatures from the end. Oh, Jesus Christ, that is fantastic. You know.
And my only other complaint is like, how can you just? You know, they talk about how they're trying to distinguish what the Krell looked like, and they talk about the triangular door.
Yeah,
they're going, oh well, you can kind of assume what it looked like by the triangular door, but you know, no, you can't. It's just like, okay,
it wasn't necessarily functional. We don't know. They could have been. They had such a high level artistry.
Yeah, whatever.
They could have just been a design.
That's like judging by our little rectangular doors, I guess. But
you're crushing my dreams, man.
No, I'm not. I love this movie. This and This Island Earth were two of my favorite movies. It's just like,
yeah. I love the look of it. I love the scene where the cook meets the robot and he says, hey, can you hook me up? Can you hook a fella up? And he's like, well, some of the good stuff. You know, he just drinks it down, you know, and burps. You know, here I'm like, oh,
and,
God.
And since,
would 60 gallons be sufficient?
Since Robbie's like an alien design, though, the idea that he can synthesize all the stuff.
And the bottles. He made the bottles.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the bottles and only 50 tons, sir.
Yeah, he's got 480 bottles. Like, oh, Trappy, you're the best. If you need a lube job, let me know. Oh, yeah.
All right, moving on to number two. Now, if this would have been number one, I would have been okay with that. You know,
yes.
So, The Day the Earth Stood Still, 1951. Yep. This was, I think, the first science fiction movie I saw when I was a kid that made me really think, you know what I mean, about
I agree.
I don't know.
Me too,
about aliens and the social
and coming to conquer, at least trying not to conquer. I mean, yeah, they throw.
What are you gonna say, Professor Feather? Feather, you were about to say something.
No, I was just shifting.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
You're shifty. What?
So yeah, I like this one. Gort was great. Klaatu, Vratu, and Nektu, you know, all that stuff. And the first time you get an EMP.
Yeah.
And I like the kid stuff at the time when
selective
EMP. Interacting with him. It kind of drew me.
The airplanes in flight and hospitals, those things were still intact. Michael Remy is fantastic. Remy as Klaatu. There's the ethereal, you know, and the whole Christ imagery aside, which I think that's fine. That's a great symbolism. Why not? This movie was great.
Even in the little comic, the little pulp story though too. I mean,
yeah, I thought
the robot was supposed to be.
Robot's terrifying and wonderful, and I love how they describe him as seamless, and the ship design is simple. I like that the alien wants to hear the human side, and I love the scientists they go see. Let's go see the doctor. I don't know, but he looks so perfect.
Like Einstein.
And the thing he says, like, there are several thousand questions I'd like to ask you. And that's my first one. I'm like, what a scientist. Like, you know.
Erasing and then.
Yes, he erases. Yes. Don't say that. That was professor good. Needs it very much. Barnhart. I actually love this character so much. I put him in the next cozy book. He's a character. You'll meet Professor Barnhart, and he's exactly like he is in this movie. Just because it was my homage to the character.
Should I tell you about the day I met an alien?
You're going to hear about that more in book three when he has the more prominent role. But yes, because I want to take those lines. If an alien came down, there would be several thousand questions I'd like to ask him. I've already got the conversation written. But anyway, Day of the Earth Stood Still. It is one of those absolute perfect movies for me. It is one of the perfect movies. I love Michael Rennie. Patricia Neal is great. I like the messaging when Klaatu is being interviewed and he's trying to say something important about fear. And so the newspaper like, oh no, that's not going to be a good soundbite. Let's move on to someone else who has something a little more superficial to say. So I love that the attention and they're making a close poke here at society as well, and fear, and basing it on the right things and not being fearful of the wrong things. I like that they were trying to kind of dig at that.
What year is this? 51?
This was 51. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I always like the scene where, what is it, Gort is the robot, right? Where he's carrying the woman, because it was very Frankenstein-like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Had that kind of...
Kicking the chairs aside as he's
Cool, all right, well,
and I guess it's music. Time... Who did the music? Bernard Herrmann?
I don't know.
That music itself, right?
Yeah, it's really cool.
That heavy theremin. I have a recording, an album of like a lot of 50s sci-fi music and soundtracks. And there is, I think it's the guy who did this music. It's a whole album of like outtakes of things he did for the movies. So you can hear them doing various versions for this, Forbidden Planet, all that heavy theremin. You can hear a lot of multiple takes of that music if you're into it.
I liked the music so much when I was little, like tape recorded when it was on that just that opening. Yeah. Stupid, but anyway.
Okay, let's get to number one here. Number one is 1956 Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Kevin McCarthy, Dana Winter, Larry Gates. But number one,
it's good. It's a great movie. But I'm agree. I don't know if it should be number one. I could have gone either one, with two or three could have been one, and I've been fine with that as well.
Yeah, same here.
I think they had the same dilemma, but anyway.
Yeah, it is a great
movie. It's a good movie. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, and Dana Winter is absolutely stunning. You also get that really creepy, like physical horror, the body horror here with the pods and how they look and the people inside.
In the black,
they kind of leak
pop out.
That popping sound, you know, kind of
like a milkweed pod or something.
Yeah, it's visceral and gross, and I really like it.
All right, well, that's it. The top 100 science fiction movies of the 1950s. So the final score in the lead, the winner is Professor Feather. He only missed 10 out of 100 movies that he didn't see. Close behind is Tar, who didn't see 12 movies. Then Dr. Head is at 20. That he hadn't seen. And the Midnight Gadfly, speaking in the third person, 10, 20, 30, 6. 36 that I haven't seen. So I need to get busy and watch some movies. All right. Does anybody, who would, all right, Professor Feather, who would you have put at number one?
On the beach.
Okay. That's what I figured you were going to say.
It's not in the top five because it's too depressing. That's why.
I'm sure it is.
I really feel that.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, you got to watch it. I mean, it's a must see for any filmophile.
I'd never heard of it. So it's, it's one of those.
Just so depressing.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I want to see it.
Yeah. It's.
I have avoided a lot of Armageddon type movies like this. And it's for a while that tend towards the, it's just me. It's just too close to that shit right now. But.
So, Dr. Head, who would you put at number one? What would you put at number one?
Probably The Day the Earth Stood Still. I mean, I love The Thing from Another World and Forbidden Planet, but I think as far as the best movie of the era, The Day the Earth Stood Still. Yeah, and Message is great. And it's so well written. And there's the subtle things, like when Klaatu's in the hospital and like the doctor, the general like leaves, and then he hears the door lock, and you just see him like this little like smile, like, oh man, are you serious?
He smirks. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're gonna lock me in, like. Really? Okay. Just those little things. Anyway, not to get on it again, but yeah, Day of the Earth Still.
Yeah. How about you, Dr. Tyre? What would you put?
I'd have to go with Day of the Earth Still too, because that was my introduction to really heavy sci-fi. It wasn't like the other movie. I liked the other movie. Don't get me wrong about that. I really loved the other movie, but this was like the one that really, like you were saying, it made you think, and it was like, oh wow, yeah. But
yeah,
then you turn around and watch War of the Worlds going, yeah,
and so
well destruction
written. It was very well written. It wasn't pandering. Yeah. it wasn't schlock, it wasn't trying to appeal to the teenage crowd. It was written well. And you, Gadfly?
Mine would have been Forbidden Planet. I just, again, there's something very visual about it that appeals to me, and it's got a style that I really liked. The forced perspective, matte paintings were amazing. Okay. Yeah, the sets, everything was just cool. And just the scale of things, too, how small they looked in that huge, that huge structure and stuff. And, Robbie the Robot.
The Krell machine, that was probably one of the coolest scenes. Yeah, that was just neat.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up.
Yeah. You guys want to watch me take a dump? Say.
Always.
Have been experiencing
Insane Radio is on Facebook, insaneradio.com, features all of the artwork. Most of it's good, and yeah, whatever else. Tar and Feathers here and there.
And Heavy Metal Horror is on Facebook. Heavy Metal Horror Podcast is on the YouTubes. Heavy Metal Horror Podcast is right here on Unsane Radio. And Montag Lewis is on Instagram. Heavy Metal and Horror.
Rawr, 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 rawr,
rawr, rawr, rawr.
Gadfly, where are you hanging out?
We Freaks.
Oh yeah, Wheat Freaks. Yeah.
WEEFREEKZ
on the Facebook. Go see it. Where am I hanging out?
Webcomic. That's right.
I got fired from the Dumb Gum Corporation. I now work for Looky Lube, the lubricant for the porn industry. I can't remember what this looked. Yeah.
Astral Glide and beyond.
So this is our tagline. It's Looky Lube Sex Jelly for a politer, gentler fisting.
Oh, excuse me. Plop. Yeah,
sorry. I'd like to say R.I.P. Robert Redford.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I forgot.
Yes, sir. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I would say definitely. I don't think most people realize how much he did for the film industry. You know what I mean? Like,
don't.
Yeah, and the environment. He was a huge
environmentalist. Yes, he is.
Yeah,
so did a lot for Native Americans. He was just a really good guy.
Yes,
around. You know,
when it's funny, it's him and Paul Newman both were just real nice, generous people. You know, that Paul Newman goes, all profits go to charity. You
the
know.
Way they should be.
Absolutely.
Why not? Yeah.
I really like Jeremiah Johnson.
The sting is still as funny and sharp and witty and clever. Yes. And a good of a movie as it was 50 years ago.
Yeah, you know? You're right.
And I enjoyed when he actually crossed over into the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
He did such a good job. Like Captain America. Oh, my God, that was good.
Yeah, the I like that they have these, when a celebrity dies now, they have that backwards morph that they do, where they literally like start right just before they passed away, and then they morph them into their last famous film character, and then they morph them, and they're moving. Yeah, they're moving all the way back to when he was really young. You're like, wow, man, he was like an Adonis, you know?
Yeah.
And
I remember him, that episode in Twilight Zone where he played Death, and he had to coerce his way into an old woman's apartment. She had to invite him in, and he became charming enough that he did it. But it's a good story. It's a really good story.
Yeah, All the President's Men, isn't that what that was called? Yeah, that's a great movie. Then what was the other one? Oh, 3 Days of the Condor.
Yeah,
that's probably my favorite of his. You know, that and Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid.
I like Jeremiah Johnson. I thought
that was good too. Yeah,
I really like Jeremiah Johnson a lot too.
Yeah, yeah, all new.
And then what was the other? Richard Harris one, Man in the Wilderness. I really like that one too.
All right. Let's get out of here.